Thank you, Dan. Thank all of you for coming out this morning. And thank you, Dan, and thank you, USIP, for doing this, because I think this is a very important session. You know, one of my own personal frustrations with the course of U.S. policy toward the region over the last 4 or 5 years has been this absolute determination in Washington to try to compartmentalize these two problems, to try to assume that you can somehow deal with the issues of Iran without dealing with the problems of Iraq, without recognizing the intimate interrelationship of them. And I think it's been one of the various problems that we've had, one of many problems we've had over the last 3 or 4 years, and as you've heard my co-panelists already say, it's a problem that we're likely to face in even graver terms in the future. To fill out the picture that you're getting, or at least to add another dimension to it, what I thought I would talk about is the tension in Iran's own policy, the relationship between Iran's policy toward Iraq and our own policy toward Iraq, and the looming specter of civil war in Iraq, which Babak just alluded to. Yeah, at present, one of the great benefits that the United States has had in Iraq, if you can call it that, and to the extent that we have any benefits in Iraq, that is anything going for us, is the fact that our interests and Iranian interests have been largely similar in Iraq. Now, I'm constantly getting asked the question, are the Iranians good or bad in Iraq? Something even as simplistic as that. And I'll be honest with you, it's a very difficult question to answer because the Iranians are, as Babak suggested, all over Iraq. And it's not just clerics and it's not just pilgrims. It's Quds forces, it's Pazduran, it's MOIS. It's a whole variety of different groups in Iraq. And they're doing a whole variety of different things, things that make the U.S. military and the U.S. intelligence community very uncomfortable. They're setting up safe houses, they're paying off agents, they're setting up arms caches, they're setting up communications networks. They're doing everything that they will need to do if they want to either wage some kind of a clandestine war in Iraq or support various factions within Iraq. And it's also clear that they are providing various levels of support to a whole variety of different groups inside of Iraq. You've seen, obviously, the press reports that suggest that the U.S. believes that there is even some Iranian support going to some of the Sunni insurgent groups. And again, that does seem to be the case, although the extent of that support is, I think, greatly exaggerated in the media. And what's more, the ultimate rationale behind it is also somewhat unclear. I think it's just not clear in anyone's mind whether this is something that is being specifically directed at Tehran as a way of kind of keeping their hands in all pots inside of Iraq, which is entirely possible and entirely in keeping with past Iranian practices, or whether this is the IRGC or somebody else in Iraq doing a little freelancing, for which there is also lots of evidence in Iran's press. Both are entirely possible. But it creates this very complicated picture. And what I will say is the more that I look at Iran in Iraq, and the more information that does seem to come to light, I still do come to the conclusion that I think at the end of the day, Iran's behavior in Iraq, the things that it's been up to in Iraq, have ultimately been more positive for the United States than negative. Even if it is the case that they are providing some level of support to Muqtada Sadr, even if it is the case that they are providing some level of support to certain Sunni groups, even if it is the case that they are simply providing a great deal of money, weapons, supplies, and other things to a whole variety of other Iraqi groups, mostly Shia, which may make them a little bit more recalcitrant in the negotiations. I think all of which is true. At the end of the day, the bigger picture that seems to emerge from the intelligence that we have is that the Iranians have largely been telling their friends inside of Iraq, and that's the term I would use. I would never call them proxies. I would certainly never call them puppets. But their friends in Iraq, they have very consistently told to participate in the process. And, of course, this was huge early on. I mean, early on, there was a real question mark as to whether Hakim and Skiri were actually going to participate in the reconstruction process. And as best we understand it, the Iranians basically gave them the green light, said we'll have no problem with this. And the consistent message that we've seen from the mainstream leadership in Tehran to their various Iranian friends, to their Iraqi friends, has been we have no problem with what the Americans are doing. And in fact, if you talk to Iraqi Kurds and Iraqi Sunni Arabs, what you often hear from them is a fear that in point of fact, the reconstruction is going swimmingly for the Iranians, and in fact is simply empowering all of Iran's friends and putting the Iranians in the catbird seat in Iraq. This is a very real fear on the part of many Iraqi Kurds and many Iraqi Sunni Arabs, who believe that all of the leading candidates in the Iraqi government are, by and large, proxies of the Iranians. And again, I think that this is exaggerated also. But for me, it is more proof of the point that the Iranians have largely been encouraging their friends inside of Iraq to participate. And this has been extremely important to us. As Babak was suggesting, there's a tremendous amount of Iranian influence. As I've just said, there are a lot of Iranian fighters inside of Iraq who could make a lot of trouble, again, as Babak also suggested. And the case is, the fact of the matter is that if the Iranians had chosen to oppose us in Iraq, reconstruction could look a hell of a lot worse than it does even now. So this has been very positive for us. The problem, one of the problems that I see looming out there, though, is that at some point in time, our goals and Iran's goals may diverge, and they may diverge very significantly. And in particular, where I see that potential for divergence is in the continued slide towards civil war. And I think this is a course that we're already seeing Iraq on. I will say I think that at this point it's a very gradual slide, and I will also say that I think that it is entirely reversible. I don't think that Iraq is past the point of no return. I think there are things that can be done to make the situation considerably better. But some of the things that you've heard Babak talk about, some of the things that you've read in the press, there are a whole variety of different factors already out there which are trend lines toward eventual civil war inside of Iraq. I apologize for constantly changing this on you. About 3 months ago, I wrote a piece saying that the most underreported story in Iraq was the corruption in the Iraqi government. I'm now going to change that. I now think that the most underreported story in Iraq is the growth of the militias all across Iraq, and in particular in the south. People just coming back from Baghdad, it's interesting, a friend of mine, an Iraqi friend of mine, just coming back from Baghdad, was actually bragging about how Baghdad is now a little bit better than it was even a few months ago. Why was it better? Well, because the militias have carved up the city. And so you go from Talibanistan to Sadr City to Barzanistan to maybe an area controlled by one of the local militias, and they're creating a somewhat greater sense of security, inside of Baghdad. And obviously that's good for Iraqi citizens, at least in the short term, but it's very bad for the future of Iraq. And you're seeing it all throughout the south. I mean, the incident that Babak referred to in late August, where you had the clash between the Badr Brigades and the Mahdi Army, I see as very, very ominous. It's something that I've been worried about for a very long time. You're starting to see it. Reports from southern Iraq talk about local sheikhs, local alims, local would-be warlords of all stripes, putting together arms caches, putting together little militias, in many cases for purely defensive reasons, talking to their personnel, to the members of their neighborhood or their village or their whatever, their clan, and saying to them, if things really go to hell, are you going to be there for us? Will you fight for us? Will you rally around the mosque? Will you rally around the village? These are all very ominous signs. And add to that the efforts by Hakim to kind of carve out this regionalization of the Shia South, which again seems to be very much a part of this clash between the Badr Brigades and the Mahdi Army, where there seems to be a sense that things are moving in this direction, and so people want to try to claim as much of the territory as they can. And you're seeing a hardening of efforts by the Sadrists to mark out what their territory is, and Badr Brigades and Hakim's people to do the same in their parts. And there's even a beginning of jostling and reconnaissance to feel out who'd be able to grab what and what would be available for the taking. And all of this is very, very dangerous. And I think this comes back to the point that Jeff started out with, which I completely agree with, which are Iran's various nightmare scenarios. And let's put aside Jeff's first two nightmare scenarios. I think they're very real, but I think the fact of the matter is that we'll all be very fortunate. We'll consider ourselves very lucky if those are the nightmare scenarios that we get left with, that Iraq is so stable and so friendly to the West that we either have this wonderful secular democratic government or we've got an American puppet. I mean, my God, that'd be fantastic at this point in time. So I don't think that any of that is very likely. I think the real thing that's out there is this real potential for a slide to civil war, and I completely agree with Jeff that I think that this is one of Iran's nightmares, and I think that right now it's got to be one that is very much on their plate as perhaps the most likely nightmare. Now, this is where U.S. and Iranian goals diverge. Because if it really does look like we are sliding towards civil war, I think that the Iranians have every incentive, and I think that this is part of what they've been doing in Iraq, to move first, to go after their enemies as best they can, to help their allies as best they can, to set up buffer states, to arm proxies, to go to war with the Kurds and the Sunnis as best they can, as quickly as they can. And that's a very important point. As I said, the Iranians have a very extensive network inside of Iraq right now. They are very well positioned to move. The Iranians are also not stupid, though. They understand that if Iran really starts to deteriorate, Iraq's other neighbors will likely feel compelled to intervene in their ways as well. The Saudis, the Kuwaitis will undoubtedly not want to see a Shia triumph, an Iranian triumph inside of Iraq. They will doubtless go looking for Sunni proxies of one sort or another. At the very least, even if it's not true, I believe that the Iranians will have to assume that this is the case. I think you can say the same thing for the Jordanians and the Syrians, and obviously the Turks have their own set of problems because they don't really have a natural client group inside of Iraq. They simply have a big problem in the Kurds, who will be sorely tempted to declare independence should the rest of Iraq fall apart. But the fact of the matter is all of the neighbors will have an incentive to try to move in Iraq, to try to guarantee their interests, to advance the agendas of their own allies, and again, like the Iranians, to try to push the chaos as far away from their borders as they can. Right now, as I'm suggesting, the Iranians are best placed to do that. They're best placed both because of the extensive ties with the Shia community that Babak was talking about, but also because of the groundwork that they've already laid inside of Iraq. And for my part, my sense of what's been going on in Tehran is that you've had a real policy debate over Iraq, as you have in almost every issue inside Iran, where the mainstream leadership has basically been deciding that they do want to continue to allow reconstruction to proceed, that that would be the best alternative, the best outcome for Iran, to have this stable, prosperous, democratic Iraq where the Shia were the majority because of these close ties Babak talked about. But you've got other elements inside of Iran who either believe that Jeff's first two nightmare scenarios are real ones and therefore Iran needs to be fighting against them right from the start, but others who simply believe that the United States doesn't know what it's doing inside Iraq and that we're inevitably going to fail. And in failing, we will create the chaos, which I think is their most likely nightmare, and that therefore they need to move. And the concern that I have is an issue of timing. Because at some point in time, if these trend lines that Babak and I have both been talking about, if these incidents continue, if you see the tension between the Sadrists and Skiri and Dawa and the other groups in the south continue to grow, if you continue to see Al-Qaeda going after Shia the way that they have been trying to provoke this civil war, if you see other Sunni groups starting to enter the fray, if it looks like the central government is not going to come up with some kind of a solution that will allow Iraq to muddle through, I think that those forces inside of Tehran, those within the Iranian government who have been arguing to basically move toward open warfare, they're going to gather momentum. And there is going to be increasing pressure on the Iranian mainstream leadership to jettison their support for reconstruction and to opt for war. Okay, and we don't know when that could happen. That's the problem. There will likely be some kind of a threshold, some kind of a trigger in Tehran. But we won't know what the trigger is. We don't know enough about Iranian decision-making to know what it is that will be brought to the attention of Iran's Supreme National Security Council that will cause them to say, okay, this is the start of civil war. We need to move. We need to move now. And because of this pressure to preempt, because Iran does hold so many cards now, because I think in the minds of Iranians, those assets or their advantage can only diminish over time, the pressure is likely to grow, and it may be very difficult to predict that trigger, because the trigger, the threshold, may actually start to rise over time. And for me, there are a number of very important unknowns out there that I think will be part of this Iranian decision. The first is the question of what do the Iranians think about Iraq's prospects for stability right now? You know, even within Washington, there's a great deal of debate. Yes, I think the consensus is that Iraq is not terribly stable, that the trend lines aren't terrific, and that it's going to require some major changes to change that situation. But we really don't know what the Iranians think. It may be that they look at Iraq and actually see it as being more stable than we give it credit for. If that's the case, then that actually will help the situation. They'll be less likely to move. Another question out there is one that Babak alluded to. Who do they think can control the South? They have a very good set of ties with Skiri, with the Badr Brigades in particular, although there's now talk about Hakim having distanced himself from the Iranians. By the same token, I was interested to hear what Babak said about the relationship with the Sadrists, because, in fact, what I hear from Iraqi leaders, including even this week, as you know, many of them are in town, is that Muqtada is receiving aid from the Iranians, but really doesn't care for them, and would very much like to cut his ties from them if he can. If that is the case, the Iranians may very well decide that if the balloon goes up, they really have to go with the Badr Brigades and with their traditional allies in Skiri, not only because of the long-standing ties, but also because Skiri probably has the largest amount, the greatest amount of military power. But Skiri doesn't have the kind of military power it would need to conquer all of the South. And I think that it would have a great deal of difficulty and would require enormous amounts of aid to eventually succeed in taking over the South. And if that's the case, what do the Iranians think about the prospects for fragmentation? And could they somehow forge alliances? Could they somehow force Sadr and Hakim to come to the table and strike some kind of alliance under an Iranian aegis? I don't know the answer to this, but this also has to be on their mind. And then finally, there is this issue of the tension between the Hakims and the Sadrs. I mean, we should remember that the Sadrs, the Hakims, the Hoys, the leading families of Shia Iraq have a long history themselves, and it's not always been a good one. And they also have their own problems with various leading Iranian groups and various leading Iranian clerics and schools, etc. And there's a whole lot of history, a lot of baggage there as well. And we don't know the answer to this. And for me, it is all these unknowns that is going to govern Iran's decision-making toward Iraq. But for me, the bottom line, what I take away from all of this is two things. First, the United States needs to recognize how important this tacit cooperation has been from Iraq. And while I certainly would agree that we have a real problem with Iran's nuclear program, and it's one that definitely needs to be addressed, we can't solve Iran's nuclear program at the expense of Iran's continued tacit cooperation inside of Iraq. And second, and it's kind of a related issue, we need to be very clear about what Iran's red lines are and what its thinking is. We need a much better effort made to find out what the Iranians are doing. In particular, for me here, I'd very much like to see the resumption of the covert talks that took place during our intervention in Afghanistan, because I think that gave us insight into Iranian decision-making that we currently lack. And I think it's something that we increasingly need, because Iran's decision about civil war in Iraq could be the single most decision in the most important decision in post-war or post-Saddam Iraqi history. If the Iranians decide to move, it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. They will kick off the civil war that they're trying to win if they move. Because the moment they move, the Sunnis have to move, the Kurds have to move, and all of Iraq's neighbors also have to move immediately. And if that happens, we're going to long for the days of 2004, 2005. Thanks very much.